Hare Krishna. I'm going to read Mantra 2 from the Ishopanishad, and it's on page 23 of the Ishopanishad book in your pack. It's there on the next, on the chair. It's there on the chair next to you. So. Mantra 2, starting with the synonyms first. Kurvan, doing continuously. Eva, does. Iha, during this span of life. Karmani, work. Jiji Vishet, one should desire to live. Shatam, 100. Samaha, years. Evam, so living. Tvai, unto you. Na, no. Anha, alternative. Itaha, from this path. Asti, there is. Na, not. Karma, work. Lipyate, can be bound. Nare, unto a man. Kurvan eve ha karmani, jiji vishe chatam samaha. Evam tvai nanyate tosti, na karma lipyate nare. Let's do that together. Kurvan evaha karmani, jiji visheshatam samaha, evam tvai nanyate tosti, na karma lipyate nare. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. So before we go into the purport of this particular verse, let's look at the translation a little bit more. So in the translation it says that one may aspire to live for hundreds of years, page 23. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. So what is the kind of way that we are talking about? What's the type of way that you should work? And that is mentioned in mantra number 1 of the Ishanaparishad, which is on page 17. So I will quickly read the translation so that we have our bearings. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. So that's the kind of way that we should be living in. And if we live like that, then we can live for hundreds and hundreds of years without being bound by any kind of a karma. So going into the purport now, Prabhupada says, no one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. This tendency is visible not only... individually, but also collectively in the community, society, and nation. There is a hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities, and the Vedas say that this is quite natural. The living being is eternal by nature, but due to his bondage in material existence, he has to change his body over and over again. So in the Bhagavad Gita also, there's a verse which talks about that this soul is actually put inside the material body, and in the material body it goes and enjoys the various modes of material nature, and because of its involvement and attachment to the different modes of material nature, it is born in different various species of life. So that part is again emphasized by Prabhupada here as well. So this process by which you change the body over and over again, this process is called transmigration of the soul or karmbandhan, bondage by one's work. So the living entity has to work for his livelihood because that is the law of material nature. And if he does not act according to his prescribed duties, he transgresses the law of nature and binds himself more and more to the cycle of birth and death in many species of life. So the important point here is that we have to act according to the prescribed duties. And how do we define the prescribed duties? So prescribed duties will be according to According to the Varna Ashrama, right? According to the Varna that you are born in and according to the ashrama or the stage of life that you are in, you will be doing the particular, you will be assigned particular kind of duties. And as long as we stay in our Varna Ashram mode and we do our duties and do our work accordingly, then we do not enter into the cycle of birth and death. Going over to the next paragraph, other life forms are also subject to the cycle of birth and death. But when the living entity attains a human life, he gets a chance to get free from the chains of karma. Karma, akarm, and vikarm are very clearly described in Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures, are called karma. So the important point over here is that we have to refer to the scriptures to define what is exactly our duty. We just can't, you know, come up with some mental concoctions and say that this is my duty and this is how I think it should be. Hare Krishna. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma. So again, one thing to keep in mind, contrasting akarma with karma, is that karma, doing just your duties, is not going to free you from the cycle of birth and death. There are specific kinds of actions that you have to do, which fall under the purview of akarma. These are the ones that free one from the cycle of birth and death. And actions that are performed through the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to the lower forms of lives are called vikarma. So vikarmas will be actions that we do without following any of the scriptures there. So of the three types of action, that which frees one from the bondage to karma is preferred by the intelligent men. Because who wants to come back again and again to the cycle of birth and death? Ordinary men wish to perform good work in order to be recognized and achieve some higher status of life in this world or in heaven. But more advanced men want to be free altogether from the actions and reactions of work. Intelligent men well know that both good and bad work equally bind men to their material miseries. So, key point over here is that whether it is good or whether it is bad work, both of them are going to bind you to the material miseries. Prabhupada is talking about misery. So when we come to this material world, we will get misery somehow or the other. Like you get married to somebody, that person mistreats you, you are miserable. If the person does not mistreat you, you are worried he will die or she will die. So in either case, you are miserable. So so this material world, like Prabhupada says, there's nothing auspicious at all in this material world. So intelligent men, they know that both good and bad work equally bind one to the material miseries. So consequently, they seek that work which will free them from the reactions of both good and bad work. Such liberating work is described here in the pages of Isha-Upanishad. The instructions of Sri Isha-Upanishad are more elaborately explained in the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes called the Gita-Upanishad, the cream of all the Upanishads. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verses 9 to 16, the personality of Godhead says that one cannot attain the state of Naishkarma or Akarma without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When he realizes the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva Krishna, it is to be understood that he has attained the state of positive knowledge. So we have negative knowledge, you know, which tells you that everything is the material world. You go get the best house, you go get the best car. So that is all negative knowledge. The positive knowledge is that when we understand and we realize that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the authority. And that's what was also mentioned in mantra number one, that he is the Ishavasya, he is the Supreme, and he is the controller of everything. So when one understands that, in this purified stage, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, sattvam, rajas, and tamas, they cannot act. So very, very important point, that once we get that knowledge, when we get that realization, then these modes of material nature cannot act on us. And then whatever we are, whatever work we do, we are able to work on the basis of Naishkarma or Akarma. And this kind of a work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death. So factually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. This is very, very important. One has to do nothing more than render devotional service to the Lord. It makes life so much easy. However, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop fruitive work. So it takes all kinds of people to make this world. And there are three modes of material nature. They combine with each other. And sometimes one mode, you know, is dominant on the other modes in different flavors and different combinations. So there will be people who will still be having some desires for fruitive activities. So they cannot just immediately stop after hearing this word. So they will continue on in that cycle. Just as if you have an electrical fan, and if you switch off the current or switch off the power supply to that, the blades still move for some time. So there's kind of a latency over there. So a conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification for his own self-interest, immediate or extended. So the key word here is for his own, for us, for me, for my family, or for my planet, or my country, community, and so on. An ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment, and when this principle of sense enjoyment is extended to include his society, nation, or humanity in general, it assumes various attractive names such as altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, and humanitarianism. These isms are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhan, karmic bondage. But the Vedic instruction of Sri Isha Upanishad is that if one actually wants to live for any of the other isms, he should make them God-centered. So again, the key point over here is that for any of the isms, we have to make them God-centered. For example, people go and try to do things which, you know, affect the whole nation, like I'm going to set my nation free, or they try to do something which affects the entire planet, I'm going to save this planet from plastic and things like that. But whatever action that we do, which you know, extends to us, our family, or you know, whatever the our sphere of influence is, it has to be God-centered. And a typical example of that is Srila Prabhupada. He also went from country to country. He also went from place to place for several years. But whatever he did was for the good of the people. But his activities were all God-centered. He was trying to bring Krishna consciousness to people. So that is the kind of work which is really the akarma, which does not bring bondage and is beneficial for everybody who's involved there. Actually, it's because it is due to Srila Prabhupada that we are sitting here and we are reading this Isha Upanishad, which at least for me would have been very difficult to read because it's in Sanskrit and I don't understand that language. So there's no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist, or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his duties in relation with Ishavasya. Ishavasya is Ishwar as the controller, the God-centered conception. So in the Bhagavad Gita 2.10, Lord Krishna states that God-centered activities are so valuable, yet that just a few of them can save a person from the greatest danger. And what is the greatest danger in life? What's the greatest danger that we have? Is death the greatest danger? You'll buy again? Falling into the lower species, into a lower species of life, and forgetting Krishna, and death. So these are all various kinds of fears that we have, and the greatest that Prabhupada says is falling into the lower species of life, as Rakshitabhu mentioned. So in the Bhagavad Gita 2.14, it's a very nice verse, and we'll go to that once I finish reading this. So in the Bhagavad Gita 2.40, Krishna states that God-centered activities are so valuable that just a few of them can save a person from the greatest danger. The greatest danger of life is the danger of gliding down again into the evolutionary cycle of birth and death among the 8,040,000 species. And of the 8,040,000 species, 400,000, thank you so much, sorry about that. 8,400,000 species, and out of these 8,400,000 species, only 400,000 species belong to the human category. Rest of all of them are in the lower categories, so there's a big risk over there. If somehow or other a man misses the spiritual opportunity afforded by this human form of life, very important word over there, there's a spiritual opportunity that we get because we have a human body. So if somehow or other a man misses the spiritual opportunity afforded by his human form of life and falls down again into the evolutionary cycle, he must be considered most unfortunate. Due to his defective senses, a foolish man cannot see that this is happening. Consequently, Sri Isha Upanishad advises us to exert our energy in the spirit of Ishavasya. Being so engaged, we may wish to live for many, many years. Otherwise, a long life in itself has no value. For example, a tree lives for hundreds and hundreds of years, but there is no point in living like a long time like trees, or breathing like bellows, or begetting children like hogs and dogs, or eating like camels. A humble, God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. Okay? For example, people talk about yoga. There are so many yoga centers all over America and in different countries as well. But a yoga which does not talk about how you are going to get connected to the Lord is no yoga at all. It is just a simple physical exercise that you are doing. When altruistic activities are executed in the spirit of Sri Ishopanishad, they become a form of karma yoga. Such activities are recommended in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verses 5 to 9, for they guarantee their executor protection from the danger of sliding down into the evolutionary process of birth and death. Even though such God-centered activities may be half-finished, they are still good for the executor because they will guarantee him a human form in his next life. Again, very, very important point over here is that if you are performing God-centered activities and if we are not able to complete it, if we are not able to go back to Godhead in this lifetime, not all is lost because we have this guarantee that we will get a human form of life in the next birth where we can continue from where we left off, which is not lacked in the material world. Once we die, whatever we have gained by way of material things, all are lost over here. We have to leave them all behind. The only thing that we take with us are these God-centered activities and the karma that we do. So how can one execute God-centered activities is elaborately explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. We have rendered this book into English as the Nectar of Devotion, and Ramananda Sakaprabhu was today reading and quoting from the Nectar of Devotion a couple of verses earlier. We recommend this valuable book to all who are interested in performing their activities in the spirit of Sri Ishopanishad. And once the talk of Nectar of Devotion has come, I'd like to mention that we have this Bhakti Shastri program where we have, you know, 4-semester-long program where we cover various scriptures. And the next semester that's coming up is going to talk about Nectar of Devotion. So if you're interested, please do contact us there. So how are we doing on time, Prabhuji? Just about there? Okay. So maybe I'll just take a few minutes and we'll just read the verses. So Bhagavad Gita 2.40. Pooja, do you have the number? Page number. She's very good at it. 2.40. We'll just read that. Page number 113 in the Bhagavad Gita book, which is on your book stand here. Nehabhikarma nashosti pratyavayo na vidyate swalpam asya swalpam apya asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So that's the one that Prabhupada was quoting in the purport. And I'll quickly read the purport. Activity in Krishna consciousness or acting for the benefit of Krishna without expectation of sense gratification is the highest transcendental quality of work. Even a small beginning of such activity finds no impediment, nor can that small beginning be lost at any stage. Any work begun on the material plane has to be completed, otherwise the whole attempt becomes a failure. But any work begun in Krishna consciousness has a permanent effect even though not finished. The performer of such work is therefore not at a loss even if his work in Krishna consciousness is incomplete. 1% done in Krishna consciousness bears permanent results, so that the next beginning is from the point of 2%, whereas in material activity, without 100% success, there is no profit. Right? If you start a project in your work, if you don't complete the project, there's no promotion, there's no bonus, there is no nothing. Right? So that's the state it is. One more verse a couple of verses that were quoted were from chapter 18, and those were verses 5 to 9. So I'll just quickly go through those as well before I wind up. So page, chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 5 to 9. 706, there you go. Thank you. Yajna dana tapakarma natyajam karyameva tat yajno danam tapascheiva pavanani manishinam. So here he's talking about acts of sacrifice, charity and penance. So Krishna is telling Arjun, acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even the great soul. So one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that while we are talking about the different kinds of activities, karma, vikarma, akarma, might lead one to think like, what if I don't do anything, I stop doing everything, then there is no risk and no danger of me making any mistakes, because mistakes are only done by people who work. So here Krishna is saying that acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. And in 6 he says, all these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O son of Pritha. That is my final opinion. And depending on the Varnashram, you will have your duties defined to them. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to be renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. So, what's renunciation in the mode of goodness? That's verse number 9. O Arjun, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to his fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. So, this is still in the renunciation in the mode of goodness, that he's not being attached to the fruit. But even beyond that is the fourth mode in which we can work, and that is transcendental to these modes of material nature. And that is when you do everything for Lord. Whatever you do for Krishna, whatever you do it for Krishna. Don't think about the result. Don't do it for yourself. And then there will be no karma bondage with us. So with that, I'll finish my slot over here and invite Rakshit Prabhu to come and continue the session. Hare Krishna.